Hello, this is McLovin, and you're listening to Wiener's Barbecue on CITR.
In the timbers of an area, the wolves are running round. The winter was so hot and cold, froze 10 feet beneath the ground. Don't murder me, I beg of you, don't murder me. Please don't murder me. I sat down to my supper, was a bottle of red whiskey. I said my prayers, went to bed, that's the last they saw of me. Don't murder me, I beg of you, don't murder me. Please don't murder me. When I awoke, the dire wolf, 600 pounds of sin, was grinning at my window. All I said was, come on in. Don't murder me, I beg of you, don't murder me. Please don't murder me. The wolf came in, I got my cards, we sat down for a game. I cut my deck to the queen of spades, but the cards were all the same. Don't murder me, I beg of you, don't murder me. Please don't murder me. Dire wolf collects his due while the boys sing round the fire. Don't murder me, I beg of you, don't murder me. Please don't murder me.
Everybody, welcome to Wiener's Barbecue here on 101.9 FM CITR Radio, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, every Tuesday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. Lots to get into on the show today. We've got a ton of UBC sports. We're going to get into UBC women's soccer in about 10 minutes from now. We've got UBC Thunderbird men's basketball just at the top of the hour at 5 o'clock. But to start things off, I have three members, one coach and two players, of a team that won a national championship on the weekend. They were 2-1 winners versus, it was Laval. They beat 2-1. Steve Frizzeo got the winning goal in the 83rd minute to give UBC a 2-1 win and their second national championship in 3 years from the UBC Thunderbirds Championship 2007 men's soccer team. I have with us on the show today, on the phone, we have Coach Mike Mosier. Coach, how are you?
Doing just great, thank you.
And with us, we have one of the captains of the team, Mike Elliott. Mike?
Oh.
There we go. And the tough name to pronounce here, okay? From Buenos Aires, Argentina. Coach, tell me if I have this right. I'm going to struggle here. Ferreira Pinho.
Amazing.
Did I?
That was really good.
Did I do it? So, Mike, let's start with you. You're one of the captains. Tell us what it meant for you guys to get the big 2-1 win on the weekend to be national champions.
It meant a lot. I think, you know, knowing that we were hosting, we've been building to this really since the end of last year. And it was especially important, I think, given the season that we'd had, because in a lot of ways it was a battle right from the get-go. We started off first weekend, struggled a little bit, and kind of put ourselves behind the eight ball. But from there, I think we really grew as a team, and I think in large part the struggles that we went on early in the season made it that much more gratifying.
Yeah, Coach, one win in your first five games, but you knew you had the automatic bid to the Nationals. Any worry at all for you during the season that, you know, maybe you guys were going to backdoor your way into the Nationals and have to turn on a switch eventually? Or what was your feeling, Coach?
There was probably some concern early on, but, you know, just a bit. You know, we were missing, especially early on, we had quite a few injuries and just different things that you know, various adversity. But I think I maintained through it all. You know, it's you know, through adversity you can build character. And I knew we had all the pieces there. So, yeah, there was concern that you know, that the guys maybe thought they could flick a switch come this time. You know, I think I just kept pushing them and you know, sort of demanding of them that you can't do that. And ultimately, it did click. It did start to come, because I think over the last few weeks of the season, the signs were there. And to be honest, you know, so many people say it was a surprise and da-da-da. It wasn't. Like, I mean, the expectation for me, and I think the expectation for the players, was that anything short of winning was disappointing.
Yeah, Ferreira, when did things start to click for your team?
Well, I think that we suffered an important loss against Trinity 4 weeks ago, and I think that was definitely a turning point. Still, I would see it more as a continuous process. I think we're a group of intelligent people. We all belong to this prestigious school, and they said that whatever doesn't kill you just makes you stronger. And we knew that we weren't going to be killed before November, so we just got stronger, learned from our mistakes. And I think that after we lost to Trinity, that was the lowest that we touched. And after that, it was all about getting more and more solid as a team and building from that. And by the time we got to Nationals, I think we had already become a very solid team.
Yeah, because, Coach, you guys did win your game versus Victoria in the Canada West Championship. You did lose to Trinity Western in the Canada West Final, but by beating Victoria in the Canada West Championship, you did at least, even if you weren't hosting, you would have earned your way to Nationals.
That's right, yeah. And I think it's important just in terms of maybe our own confidence in some way, shape, or form. But at the same time, you know, that was sort of, again, that evolution of the team. The fact that we performed, you know, quite well at the Canada West Championship, and that was sort of the, you know, as I said to the guys, that was the trial run. You know, we get a chance of a trial run before this big tournament that we're in, and that's how I think everybody approached it.
Mike, your first three-game winning streak of the year was in Nationals. How does that happen?
That's a good question. I think Marv and Mike have already touched on this, in that I think that throughout the season, this really was a building process. And Moj is right. You can't just flip a switch, and I don't think we did. It is our only three game winning streak of the year. But I think
good time
after
to do it, though, huh?
Yeah, we timed that pretty well, didn't we? No, but even after that, the loss to Trinity, I think the only game we lost was in that Canada West playoff final, which was to Trinity, and in OT, and one of our better games. I think we were a little unlucky not to get a result. So although, yeah, you look at that as the only time we strung three in a row together, I think, from that point on, I think really we'd reached the point where we were going to be a tough team to beat all the way through.
Coach, you did never, I mean, just a sidetrack here, you guys never did beat Trinity this year, but that doesn't matter, does it?
Hey, Daryl, you know what? Listen to this. We beat them four times last year, okay? And we didn't win, so what does it matter?
There you go. Ferreira, give me your thoughts, though, when Steve Frizzeo got that goal at the 83rd minute in the national championship game to put you guys up 2-1. What went through your team's mind when that goal happened?
Well, I think that we had a very strong first half. We were unfortunate to finish it only 1-0. And we made it a bit complicated on ourselves at the beginning of the second half. I had a feeling, as most of us did, that Steve had a goal in him for us. And he's a great player and a very reliable player. And we were, I was very confident, and I know that many of my teammates felt the same way, that he had he was potentially that person going to get us that goal. I'm really happy for him for getting that goal. I think he deserved it. He needed it as well. And it was a huge relief. It was very frustrating to see how we were making our own life difficult. And George Angel Mira, he just left Steve facing the keeper with an amazing pass. And it was a great end to the story.
Your thoughts on the goal, Mike?
I thought it was a great goal. Like Marv said, great ball by Georgie, and a good finish from Steve. And I'll reiterate the fact that I think, although Steve maybe had a little bit disappointing year goal-wise this year, we all believed he was going to get one eventually, and he just saved it for the right time.
Coach, your thoughts on the big goal?
Again, pretty much echo the what the other guys have said. I just had this feeling, and it was really the whole week that almost every feeling and every kind of hunch came off. I mean, it's kind of one of those weeks where you're in the zone and everything kind of goes right for you. But some guys, a couple of the assistants said, gosh, we should get Steve out of there. And I said, no, I think he's going to score. And we were still on top, and you got to, in my belief as a coach, that you got to leave the guys on the field that you think can score goals. Again, when you're carrying the play and you've got the edge, there's no reason to go into defensive mode. And Steve, even though he had a tough season from a scoring standpoint, I thought he would score. He can score. He's scored so many goals in the past, and he's a big game player. And, full credit to Steve, and I've said this to him, he persevered. Through a bit of a difficult season, because obviously when you're a forward, many times you're judged by scoring goals. But by and large, he really worked his butt off, and again, for sort of a star player or a marquee player or a name player, when you are judged sometimes by scoring goals, it's as a coach, I always recognized his hard work through the season, and he just kept pushing, and it was going to come.
What are you guys talking to about each other right here when he was talking there? What were you guys saying there? What were you guys saying? You were laughing there.
No, that it's true that sometimes forwards are judged because of the number of goals that they score, and the hard work, as Mike Mosher was pointing out, is disregarded, and that's why it's so important for the team and for Steve to have scored such an important goal and reindicate himself.
Yeah, vindicate himself, that's right.
Did you know they were talking about taking Steve out of the game at some point? Or
no, those assistant coaches, eh?
Yeah, what were they thinking?
But the thing was, is it was more a case of fatigue. That game, we played, 14, 15 hours after getting off the field against York, which I basically characterize as probably the best game I've been involved with in my 12 years as a head coach. That game was unbelievable and emotional and everything that goes with it. I mean, the pace of the game, everything was just terrific. And there was this huge high after the game, and the concern was in some ways that, we got to come back and we got to deliver again, because really after that game it was awesome, but we hadn't won anything yet. And but the biggest thing was the fatigue factor, the short turnaround, the hard game, overtime, blah blah blah. you know, there was guys out there like that I could see it. They were so tired. Guys like Steve, guys like Nico, guys like Jorge, those three in particular. But those are all three guys that basically I would expect, you know, could pull a goal out of nothing. And that's why they stayed on the field.
When we were talking about the assistant coaches, I just said, kidding, what were they thinking? But I think they deserve like a special paragraph, because when we talked about all those rough moments that we came through, I think that their support, their composure, and their confidence in the team is what made it possible. And both Lucas Urres and Darren Prentice were a huge asset of the team, too.
Yeah, I agree. Definitely a special paragraph for them.
Mike Elliott, tell us about the 2-1 win, the overtime winner versus York in the semifinals.
That was incredible. That was, an amazing game to be part of. It was the only game out of the three where we were down a goal. And I think maybe that speaks a little bit to the character that we've been talking about building up through the season. Because it's not easy to go down in a game like that, especially at the time that we did. With about 20 minutes
20
left.
20 minutes to go.
Yeah. But I don't think any of us ever really lost faith. And Nico came up with a big goal, and then Ben Hunt with a spectacular winner in the OT. So, yeah, I think that was a really special game to have a role in.
And, Coach, you mentioned that one will forever have a special spot in your heart here at UBC.
Without a doubt. You know, you wouldn't believe how many of my coaching colleagues from around our conference, from across the country, have sent me emails of congratulations and so on and so forth. But they just keep talking about that game. They're like, wow, what a game. I know different people within the community who have been saying, like, what an incredible game. My alumni were amazed. Many of those guys, you know, are friends of mine who won three national championships here as players. And they were stunned by the pace of that game. There's been comments from people I don't even know, you know, through friends and what have you, who were just stunned at the level at which that game was played. Like, people who had not seen a university soccer game and just, like, shook their head and said, like, why haven't I been out to watch this?
Mike, that's your feeling of that game?
Yeah, no, it was incredible. And full credit to York, because they were an outstanding team. Unlucky, really.
I definitely agree. Me as a forward, I think that's the toughest defense that I've played against. They were huge people at the back, strong in the air, skillful with the ball on their feet. They're very, very complete. They were really, really difficult to score against. And
they were also a little bit quicker than you, too, weren't they, Marv?
I don't know about that, Mike.
Well, you guys got the last lap. The UBC Thunderbird men's soccer team, second national championship in 3 years. 2-1 winners over Laval in the national championship game. Coach, congratulations. With us today, Mike Elliott. Mike, congratulations.
Yeah, thanks very much.
And Ferreria Pinho?
It's just getting better. Thank you.
Am I botching it that bad, Coach?
No, it's not bad.
Not bad.
From Buenos Aires, Argentina, Martin Ferreira Pinho.
Yeah, I don't know if you're asking the best person, though. But Mike, you're doing well, too.
More practice than Daryl.
Thanks a lot, guys. And Coach, so your dad won the national championship last year. You won it 2 years ago, so you had to take it this year, hey?
I guess, yeah. I don't know what that means for next year, though.
You'll deal with it then.
My intentions.
You'll deal with it then. I was at a wedding with your brother on the weekend, you know.
Jason Ross.
There you go, yeah.
Nice.
There you go. Awesome. Mike Mosier, and I mentioned the two players. Thanks for coming on, guys, and congratulations on winning the national championship.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Daryl.
All right, everybody. We'll be right back with two members of the UBC Thunderbird women's soccer team. Right after this, you're listening to Wiener's Barbecue on 101.9 FM.
Thunderstorms, see the lightning flashing, thunderstorms.
Thank you for stopping that. If you actually want to learn more about weather, join the UBC Storm Club. For more information, email us at stormubc@gmail.com. Stop playing those cheesy songs and tune into News 101 Mondays and Fridays for your CITR weather forecast. student-made, student-featured UBC TV. Check out www.ubctv.ca. Originally conceived in 1990, UBC TV reinvented itself this past year with the launch of www.ubctv.ca. With support from UBC Rec and run by and for students, the site showcases student material ranging from films and music videos to sports, including the production of its own show, UBC Sports Desk. With the goal of getting students involved, UBC TV allows students to submit their content. Viewers have the added advantage of video on demand, allowing them to choose with ease exactly what they want to watch and when. UBC TV is recruiting staff for the next school year. Positions available are IT Director, Marketing Director, Program Director, Producer, Videographer, and Marketing Assistant. Anyone interested is requested to send an email to info@ubctv.ca or to log on to ubctv.ca for more details.
I want to be on your TV so that you might notice me.
All right, everybody, welcome to Wieners Barbecue here on 101.9 FM CITR Radio, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, every Tuesday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. Once again, folks, on the show today, we are in about 10 minutes' time going to be dipping into UBC Thunder men's basketball. 5:20, 5:30 will be BJ Bass with some NFL talk, if I can get a hold of him. And at 5:40, big game at BC Place this weekend, my pal, your buddy, Julio Caravata from the BC Lions Radio Network. I'm battling a bit of a flu, I think. Does anybody have that going around? Anybody? Or is it just me?
It's just you, I think.
Is it just me, really?
Yeah.
Is that not something that's going around campus at all?
We've been away, so we don't know.
This is true.
You've been away. You were in Cape Breton?
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, they're the team we don't want to talk about, right?
Yeah.
Well, that's okay. You guys are doing great. With us right now, we're going to get into UBC Thunder women's soccer. With us right now, Caitlin Davey.
Hello.
Okay, I'm going to do this, okay?
Okay.
Because I spelt it wrong, I'm told. But I told you I did it phonetically, so we're going to do our best here. Michelle Yakashiro.
Beautiful.
Was I right?
That was good.
Okay.
That was good.
See, I told you. Now, I spelt it. How close was I on the spelling there?
Close. Y-A-K-A.
What is it?
Y-A-K-A-S-H-I-R-O.
Yeah, see, that would have thrown me off. With us right now from the UBC, we're going to talk a little UBC Thunder women's soccer. So, ladies, first off, though, you won the national championship this year. You got the bronze medal this year. Does that make it, Caitlin, does that make it a little easier for you guys? Because you guys are both third-year players that you didn't get the national championship this year.
Well, last year was just, like, a great year. I mean, we were the underdogs. We came in. We weren't really expecting to just come away with everything, but we just, you know, worked hard, and we had a great team chemistry last year and came away with the gold. This year is a little bit of a different situation. We sort of knew from the get-go that we had a very strong team and came with the bronze, which is a great result, but I mean, I think we definitely could have gone all the way. Just one of those things.
Michelle, successful season, winning a bronze medal, disappointment. How do you feel right now?
You know, it's a bit of a disappointment because we feel that we are the best team in Canada, but unfortunately we didn't come away with that outcome. So next year is a new season, and bring it on.
And, you know, 7 straight wins going into that semifinal game.
Yeah.
So you were playing great going into that game. What did happen in that semifinal, a 2-0 loss to the host team, Cape Breton?
Well, first of all, hats off to Cape Breton, the whole community, like, so much support for all the teams, and, you know, they had a great showing for every single game. So, I mean, great community support for them, and I thought that for sure helped. They're quite strong defensively, like, really dropped a lot of players back in front of the ball, so it was hard to break them down. But, just one of those things. I mean, the ball didn't roll our way. They got a couple lucky breaks, and yeah, it's not the result we wanted, but it happens.
You're nodding, Michelle.
Yes, I'm nodding. They had about 1,200 people out to our semifinal game, which was great for a small town. Like, we were in Sydney. It was teeny compared to Vancouver, for sure. And Yeah, no. Unfortunately, it didn't work out for us that day.
And you guys did come up, though, with the gold medal win versus Victoria.
Yes.
Your big rival.
Yeah.
In the bronze medal game. Did it make it a little easier to get up for that game that it was Victoria?
Go ahead, Kate.
Well, we just sort of wanted to come out and play well, play our game. We had 2 fifth years. We just wanted to win it for them, play as hard as we could, and hopefully get them a medal to remember their last year by. And yeah, anytime we play Vic, it's a big game, so we're all pretty amped to play.
Yeah.
Says something about your team character, though, that you are able to come out after. Obviously, you want to win the national championship, but you lose that game, and then you do win the bronze medal game. That has to, you know, make you guys feel good. Some pride, no?
Yeah. I think one of the bigger, like the biggest game for the CanWest finals was against Trinity, because we kept on going back and forth with wins and losses with them. So, yeah, Vic was a good one, too, though. For sure.
So, but next year, though, you guys right back on it. I mean, this team is still a top team, though, hey?
Definitely. We're not losing many players. We got a very young team, so, I mean, we're only going to go up, I think. Very young team, so.
Yeah, our bench is extremely deep. You can put anyone on the field, and they're going to get the job done. They'll make an impact.
I was told one of the problems with your team was getting everybody minutes this year.
Yeah, because we just have so many amazing players.
What was that a problem, Caitlin? You're laughing, but was that a problem?
No, it's just we have such a deep bench that it's just definitely like till the very end, you know, we didn't, everything was up in the air, you know, who's starting, who's playing when, you know, it's a battle all season for playing time, and that, you know, that just shows how strong our team was.
And I have to plead ignorance. Are either of you two a defender?
I am. Left defense, Michelle.
Okay. All right, because this is just an unbelievable defensive team. I mean, what are we looking at here? In 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. In your last 12 games, you gave up one goal.
Yeah.
Going into the semifinal game. And it was a 1-0 loss to Lethbridge, however, but still one goal in 12 games. I mean,
and that was an own goal.
It was an own goal, hey?
That was an own goal.
And last year, you went through a similar run where you weren't giving up a goal forever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, that's got to be fun to play on a defense like that, doesn't it? Or?
Oh, yeah, it's awesome.
Tell us about the defense of this team.
Well, we've got our own little cheer. We do our little D cheer before we get going. But, you know, it's always, like, from front to back, everybody's working their hardest, so it makes it easy. And we've got an amazing keeper as well, Jacqueline Dunnett. She gets the job done.
And you're a forward.
I'm a center midfielder.
You're a center midfielder, yeah. So, you know, do you guys, you know, what do you guys think of this defense corps here?
I think all over the park, starting from the strikers, they work so hard to win us the ball. They fighting all over the field, and it starts from there, right up at the strikers. Like, you know, a lot of people don't give them credit, but they have to defend too. They have to win the ball up front, and just all the way back from there, everyone works very hard to win the ball back, and yeah.
Break us through the weekend, Caitlin. You guys did start off with a 2-0 win, I'm sorry, versus Montreal in the semifinals. So tell us about that game, get into the semifinal.
That was a pretty big game because we didn't really know what they were all about. You know, we hadn't come across them, and we just wanted to come out, play our game. We knew, we know we're the best team, and, you know, so we just wanted to come out, play our game, and we got the result. You know, it took a while to get into it, I think, but finally, you know, we got 2 goals and got the result we wanted and into the semi.
And on to the semi, Michelle, you mentioned the great crowd, and tell us, though, what did go wrong in that game, a 2-0 loss to Cape Breton?
You know, I think we had some unlucky bounces on the turf. The sad thing is, nothing went wrong. Like, we all went away being like, we did not play a bad game, but unfortunately we didn't get the outcome that we wanted. Strong winds, bad bounce. It happens.
That's it. Is that what happened, Caitlin?
Yeah, totally. It's one of those things.
Tell us about the 2 goals, one in the 20th minute and another in the 34th minute, and that was all the scoring, both goals in the second half, and nothing in the first half, I'm sorry, and then that was it.
Yeah, the first goal is very scrambly. You know, ball took a huge bounce, I guess, and just up in the air, and it was just so scrambly that it's hard to know what was going on, and then it was in the back of the net, yeah. Just like that. And the second goal was off a very long free kick. I mean, honestly, if that girl tried to do that same shot 100 times, she wouldn't be able to do it. It was that fluky, but, you know, it happens, and 2-0, and yeah.
That's it, hey?
Yeah,
great goal. It was a great goal, though.
Great shot.
Caitlin Shaw?
Yeah, that was the girl, I think.
Yeah, I think the wind took it. I think Jackie kind of had it, and then... Because I was, like, watching it, and the ball kind of curved. So I'm like, that's not good.
And that was it. But still, though, national championship 2006, 2003, 2002, and we've talked about it before, UBC women's soccer is still in great shape.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. It's only going to get better. Good future ahead, too.
Yeah, next year will be great.
So, Michelle, hungry to get back at it next year and regain your crown.
Yeah.
Regain your crown. Terrific. Michelle Yakashiro?
Yep.
See, I told you I could do it. And Caitlin Davey.
Yep.
Ladies, thanks so much for coming on. And great season, a bronze medal. You had a great regular season and just tough luck in the semifinals. But absolutely congratulations, a great year. And, you know, you played for pride for that third place spot, and you did it, you know. So
thank you.
You got to feel good about that, hey?
Yeah, we do.
Awesome. All right, everybody, we're going to be right back to talk a little UBC Thunder men's basketball. You're listening to Wieners Barbecue on 101.9 FM.
What is that? I know what that is. That's music.
For $15, the Friends of CITR card scores you in-store discounts at Beat Street, Red Cat, Vinyl, Scratch, and Audio Pile. Support Vancouver's finest indie radio station and pick up your card today.
What do you want to do with your life?
I want to rock.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to Wieners Barbecue here on 101.9 FM, CITR Radio, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. With us, coming into the studio as we speak, I'm tired today, guys. I'm just not feeling it today. Or yesterday. I mean, you see me. Normally, I have a little bit of energy to me, you know, bouncing around a little bit. Not today. I woke up. I fell asleep at 7:30 last night. I think I'm coming down with something. What, is the knobs no good? Is it the headsets no good here?
No, just you're screaming in my ear. I just thought I'd turn it down a little bit.
I think I'm coming down with something. I fell asleep at 7:30, and then I woke up at about 12:30, and then I didn't fall asleep till about 4, and then I woke up for the day. So I slept the 8 hours. I know this isn't an interesting story to you, but I'm dealing with this today.
Wiener sleeping patterns.
What's that?
Wiener sleeping patterns.
Wiener sleep. It is possible, though. It's the amount of... Because I had to go out and drink with these people on Thursday.
Had to, eh?
Yeah, I had to do it. I had to do it. Tuesday I did it, last Tuesday. And then I had the wedding last Saturday.
Ooh.
I think I'm getting too old for this, Randy.
Yeah, you know, you're getting old, buddy.
Screw you. Screw you. With us on the line, with us in the studio right now, talking UBC Thunder men's basketball, point guard.
Yeah, it's me.
Alex Murphy, and assistant coach, former national champion.
That's me.
Randy Knorr. Randy Knorr. Awesome, guys. Let's get right into your games you had on the weekend. UBC now 5-1, tied with Victoria for top spot in the Pacific Division. 84-63 winners versus Fraser Valley on the Saturday, and 91-81 winners in a very tightly contested contest. On the Friday.
Yeah, they hit some shots that game.
Oh, is that what it was? Alex Murphy and Randy Knorr. So, Randy, coach, first tell us about the very tightly contested game we saw. And it was close, down to the end. I mean, to be honest, the 10 points flatter you guys. You were down by 5 with about 3.5 minutes to go, and you ended the game on an 18-3 run. Was that what it was? Something like that. Tell us about that game, coach.
What one of our assistant coaches said after, and I think sums it up pretty good, is pretty hard to play a 40-minute game only for 3 minutes. And I think that's what we did. We only played really hard for the last 3 minutes. We just kind of coasted the rest of the time and didn't really play with any emotion. And they hit shots, and we turned the ball over, and we were lucky to pull out a win.
Chris Dick caught fire just at the end there, Alex.
Yeah, well, he can do that. And I think he's one of the most talented scorers in the CIS and especially Western Canada. So he can go off any time. So I think everybody's got to be aware of that.
Okay, but down by 5 points, looks like you're in big trouble against Fraser Valley, who, you know, you lose that game. You're now 3-2. They're 4-1. Vic won that night, so you're going to be third place in the Pacific Division all of a sudden. What was said in that timeout is my question with 3.5 minutes to go.
I don't think we can say that on the air, but we just you know, brought it to their attention what was happening and why we were down, and guys responded, and Chris kind of led the way, and he really took the game over. He had two end ones and hit a three, and I think he ended up scoring 10 points in the 3 minutes. And I was glad to see that guys were able to turn it around. We haven't really had very many close games, so it was good.
So they were getting mad. There was some expletives, some cussing said during that time out there, Alex, or do you remember?
A little bit. Not just a bit. So.
No more, less than normal.
No less than normal. Well, Alex, though, what does it say about your basketball team? I mean, it had to make you guys feel good that you were able to come up with that last 3.5 minutes.
It's always good for the confidence to win a close game like that. And I think we did a better job on the defensive end in that 3 minutes than the whole entire game. That might have been a little bit overlooked. So we like to take pride in our defense. I think we did all right. And, that's where the confidence comes from.
Because, Coach, it did look like it in that basketball game that, quite frankly, they were the team getting to more loose balls than you guys till the end of it.
Yeah, we talked about that after the game. It's all the stuff that we could control. I mean, they beat us to loose balls, offensive rebounds we didn't box out, things that we have control of, and we didn't do a very good job until that last 3 minutes. I mean, the last 3 minutes we played excellent. And I would have liked to have seen the score if we would have played 40 minutes like that. But the next night was much better.
Yeah.
I think guys responded and came out and had a very good intensity right from the beginning of the game.
Alex, 21-point victory on the Saturday night. You know, you guys were up 43-31 at halftime, so much better effort from UBC.
Yeah, for sure. On the defensive end again, I think we played a lot better and talked a lot more. And I think that's one of the aspects that we're struggling at right now is communication. So I guess against a team like that, you can talk a lot on defense and just try to get better from that end. And I think we did that game.
So you're 5-1. You're going to Winnipeg this weekend. We're not doing those games, hey? We're not doing them. Hey, leave us alone.
When are you going to come on a road trip?
Just when it snows. They don't want to be there.
I'm going to Victoria. Pretty lame, huh?
You're going to Victoria. We don't go there until January.
Well, that's your next road trip.
Oh, geez.
After this, that's your next road trip. And I will be there for the playoffs, though.
Oh, you're good enough to come in the playoffs. Damn, eh? Oh, all right.
Damn straight. Coach, taking on Winnipeg and Manitoba. Winnipeg 2-2, Manitoba 0-4. Tell us about this weekend's matchups.
Both teams are actually somewhat similar. They don't really run a lot of structured stuff. They both have very talented point guards. I say point guards very loosely. Two guards that shoot the basketball a lot. On Friday night, we probably play arguably the best point guard in Canada, or in Canada West for sure. Irfan, who I believe is a 3-time or 4-time All-Canadian, first or second team. He has the ability to be able to win a game by himself, and he's done it in the past. So he's a guy that we just have to focus on a lot. On Saturday night, Isaac Ansah is another point guard. He's averaging 17 field goal attempts a game, which is more than a few of our guys combined. So both nights we just have to come out defensively, be focused, and play with a lot of intensity.
So you mentioned point guards in both of these games, and that's this guy right here, Alex Murphy. So tell us about Alex Murphy so far this season, Coach. A true freshman last year out of St. George's, getting a ton of minutes for UBC this year, is the starting point guard. Tell us about his development from last year to this year.
I think Alex did a really good job in the off season. He put in a lot of time, especially early on in the summer. Then he's actually had a really big growing spurt from the beginning of training camp till now. He came in and, he'd had his wisdom teeth pulled, so he didn't come in the best shape and really wasn't overly focused. But as a couple weeks went on, he really turned it around, and he really is leading our team. And when we play good, it's because Alex makes us play good.
Wisdom teeth pulled, hey? Would you have an infection there? Or what was the story?
I had an infection in the bottom right one, so that was pretty painful.
I've had that before. I had an infection and I had my wisdom teeth out.
It's the worst pain I've ever felt.
It takes a while to go away, too.
Two weeks I was out for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Leave them alone there. That's a bad one.
Hey, if you say so.
That's a bad one. Alex, what did you learn, though, from last year's basketball team? Obviously, Casey Archibald on that team, Jason Beering, Adam Friesen, who was a fifth-year senior, on UBC last year. What did you learn from those guys, and what have you been able to take into this year?
I knew we were going to get we were going to be struggling in the leadership department, because I think Casey led through his actions, and we needed to find like a new Casey, if you will. And I was trying to bring that to the team and just lead from the more vocal standpoint, because I know the coaches are always yelling on the bench and things we should do, things we should work on. But it's good if you have a good player on the court, like helping you and telling you guys where to be and all that stuff. So I'm trying to do that, and I've learned that from Casey and JB and Adam.
How's he doing in that department, Coach?
You know, he's getting better. A lot of it with Alex is just confidence. Like he said, it's something that as a team we really need to work on, and he's really starting to develop really strongly in that department. And the better he gets at that, and the quicker he gets good at that, the better we will become. And like I said, when he plays well, we're a really tough team to beat. When he struggles, we struggle a little bit. Just we don't really have another point guard that will come in and give us the same thing that he will give us.
So what does he have to work on? What does Alex struggle at times?
Just the consistency of being a leader on the court. Another thing that I think Alex did earlier on, and maybe hasn't done it as much the last little bit, is Alex is a really good scorer, and he just right now is in that point where he's leading Canada West in assists, so obviously he's distributing the ball great, and he has some passes every game that I'm amazed at. But at the same time, he has a few turnovers that we'd like to cut down on those, and we'd like to see him score and shoot the ball a little bit more. He's a very good offensive player, and when he gets his feet set and he decides he wants to shoot as the ball is on flight to him, he's one of our better shooters, so we'd like to kind of get him to score some points as well as distribute and run our team.
Alex, when people start playing basketball, they want to score. Obviously, that's what they want to do. When your coaches are telling you to shoot the ball more, don't you shoot the ball more? What's the story here?
I'm trying to shoot the ball more, but when you have such great talents on your team, it's difficult to pick and choose when to shoot, and I'm trying to look at everybody. I think it's more of a personality thing. I like helping people, and I'm trying to do it on the floor. So I think I'm getting better at scoring, though.
Well, what a citizen, hey, Coach? What a citizen.
Wow, it's getting thick in here.
Also, Coach, a guy, we talk about scorers. He was excellent for you guys in Alberta last weekend. 17 points on the Friday, 15 points on the Saturday, in 21 and 18 minutes respectively. Blaine LeBranch is the guy I'm talking about. How good can this guy be for your team?
Blaine has an uncanny instinct to put the ball in the hoop. He's probably one of the best guys on our team, and he can just straight out, we don't need to run any play for him. The only thing we just need to do is just give him the ball. You can set a screen, you cannot set a screen. He's really tough to beat. He just can hit really tough shots, and not very often do you find a scorer that is so good at shooting without scoring, going to the hoop. And he does everything on pull-ups, shooting threes on the pull-ups, and as a right-handed player, he's a guy that likes to go left, so he's just very tough to stop.
And it is a little different than the way your team has been really the last few years. Maybe Pasha Baines is the other guy, a guy who will just take the ball. I'm not comparing him to Pasha, but a guy who will just take the ball and do things on his own. That seems to be a little outside of what you guys have done the last few years.
Yeah, I mean, him and Pasha are somewhat similar, and they're both very talented players that you don't really need to run any plays where you just need to give them space and allow them to play. They're both very talented and can both shoot the ball so well, so make some tough guards.
And the other guy who seemed to have a very good weekend for you guys, Alex, Bryson Cool, 9 points on the Friday, 10 points, 8 rebounds on the Saturday, and only 14 minutes on the Saturday. The 10 points and the 8 rebounds, he seems to be getting back on track, and that's huge for you guys.
Of course, and especially when he's more aggressive going to the hoop, aggressive taking the ball up, and he's obviously a great rebounder. So when he's playing well, you know, we're definitely hard to stop.
He's coming along?
You know, Bryson probably had one of his best practices of the year 2 hours ago or an hour ago, and he's just with Bryson, it's just 100% confidence. And you can see it. He's having fun playing again. And for the first while, he was very frustrated just because his mind was telling his body to do something and he just couldn't do it. And he's been missing a lot of easy shots that, for a guy that's traditionally is one of the better field goal percentage shooters in Canada, and he'd been struggling a little bit. But I think as his confidence starts to grow, I mean, we're just going to be that much tougher to stop because he'll give us another person that will give us an inside presence, and he's just such a big body, so when he wants to play big and strong, we're pretty tough.
And UBC basketball, just got to ask you, Coach, is, you know, next year you are going to be playing, you know, you're going to be playing the Albertas, who's 3-1. You're going to be playing Brandon and Regina, who are both 4-0 right now. When do you think this team, and basically my question is, how do you assess this basketball team at this point? Because to be honest, you haven't played the top teams in the conference yet, it seems.
No, I mean, the only team that we've really played that is one of the better teams would be Calgary, and that's our only loss.
Who SFU beat this weekend, hey?
Yeah. See what the difference is when you play in Alberta and then in BC?
There you go.
Jab
at the referee there, I take it.
Yeah, you take it however you'd like. I think we're going to be a very good basketball team come February and March when you need to be good. This team has a lot of weapons, and once we really figure out how guys need to play with each other, and like Alex said, is once we start really starting to communicate, we're going to be a pretty tough team to beat, I think.
So, Alex, you're gelling now as the season's going on.
We're gelling.
There you go. Perfect. Alex Murphy from the UBC Thunder men's basketball team. Coach Randy Nora. Guys, thanks so much for coming on.
No problem, bud.
I'm going to have more energy next week.
Well, geez, I mean, this was just pretty shabby. I mean,
oh, come on. Come on. All right, everybody, we're going to take a break. You're listening to 101.9 FM CITR Radio, Vancouver, Canada. Mark. Hey, everybody.
Thanks a lot. Thank you.
Welcome back to Winners Barbecue here on 101.9 FM CITRadio, Vancouver, Canada. Julio Caravata from the BC Lions Radio Network with us right now. And Julio, I don't know if you noticed, because we saw each other earlier in the day.
Yes, I did. Julio, one of my highlights.
Julio, did you notice I was a little tired today? Did you
catch?
Yeah,
you did. You do. You know what? You weren't your perky self.
I tell you, Julio, all I want to do right now is I'm going to get out of the studio and I'm going to go to the gallery downstairs in the sub building. I'm going to have a plate of nachos, okay?
Uh-huh.
And then all I want to do, because there's one thing I got to do, I got to put about a little bit of time in my apartment, clean up, but all I want to do, Julio, is just go to bed.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
it.
Well, I tell you, I've had a tough couple of 3 days, almost 2 or 3 days. Well, both my kids have had croup. And yeah. I don't know if you know what that is. But
no idea.
Well, little kids get it between the ages of 2 and 5. It's an inflammation of the larynx.
Oh.
And what ends up happening is that they have a restricted breathing, and if it gets really extreme, you got to take them to the hospital, and they give them some type of a steroid that opens up their throat. But a lot of times, what you can do is you can take them outside, and the cool air, it helps them breathe. It shrinks down, or it opens up their throats, and they're able to breathe. So for the last 3 nights, I've had to. I was outside with my kids at probably about 2-3 o'clock in the morning for about an hour, bundled up in a blanket so that they could be outside. So I'm like you. I would love to just be able to fall asleep and wake up in about 3 days.
Okay, I'll stop complaining now.
And I got to work tonight too. So
I'll stop. I think mine's from going out, aka going out too much last week.
Yeah,
to be perfect.
It wears you down.
It does. I'm getting old, Julio. I'm getting old.
You know what? It's scary, Daryl, because you know what's going to happen? You're going to get to my age, and then what you're going to realize is that when you go out once, it's going to affect you for like 8 days.
Oh, no. What am I going to do?
It's depressing, I'm telling you.
What am I going to do? What am I going to do? With us right now, Julio Caravata from the BC Lions Radio Network. Julio, before we get into the Lions game this weekend, and I am very excited, it's the team I want to see.
Yes.
Play BC this weekend is Saskatchewan. What a great couple of conference semifinals games we got to see on the weekend, especially, though. I mean, the Calgary game, the score is a little closer than the game actually was, but Winnipeg-Montreal, great game. Couldn't have asked for more as a fan.
What would you have done? You go for it on
third
and one.
Punt the damn ball.
That's what I said.
Yeah.
I was screaming at the TV, too. I said, well, and normally I'm, third and one in the CFL, it's something that you should be able to execute, right? But you're ahead, right? And anything, too, you've got an embattled kicker in Troy Westwood who has had a terrible year, who had just missed previously. The last thing you want to do is give him a 20-yard field goal. You want to make him earn it. So even if there's a gale force win, I understand that, just kick the ball end over end. If you can get the ball to go 25, 30 yards, you're now forcing them to go in bad conditions to try to move the ball. And then, if anything, they're going to have to kick a longer field goal, more than likely, than just a little chip shot. Well, I was like you. I thought they should have kicked the ball.
Any repercussions there in Montreal for not going?
I think that Jim Popp has to realize where his strengths lie, and his strengths lie in being a general manager and getting personnel. He's been very successful at that for a long, long time, and I think that's what he realized. He needs to realize that's what he's good at. So hire a coach. If they allow him to go that way, hire a coach that it can handle your team and don't worry about wanting to be out in the spotlight like he wants to be. And I think this whole thing is driven by ego. He's a guy who likes to be out in the middle of everything. He likes to be front and center. And, as a GM, you kind of got to take a back seat to your coach. And I think Jim needs to do that. I think he needs to find somebody. And, there's going to be a couple of good guys that are qualified that can do that job. I think he needs to hand it over and walk away from that part of the game.
Because, Joe, the other thing about the third and one is Montreal was stopped in a first and goal from the three.
I know.
Was it on the three or two?
No, it was on the one.
It was on the one earlier in that game, a first and goal from the one. They went for it three times. And my question, though, Julio, is in the CFL this year, because I remember BC, I just think of BC this year, they're not getting the third and ones like they used to.
Yeah,
What's going on in the CFL this year?
Well, I think what ends up happening, though, is that and there was a real good contrast. If you watch both games, you watch a few times Kerry Joseph run the quarterback sneak, and he does it the way you're supposed to do it as a quarterback, and it's one of the things that Jerry Jackson, I think, has gone away from, and it's what made him successful doing it last year and the year before that, was you have to stay low, because what ends up happening on the line of scrimmage is that the defensive and offensive linemen, all they're doing is cutting one another. They want to get the offensive linemen down on the ground so that the linebackers are there to jump up and time the play. And you have to stay as low as your offensive lineman, and there can't be any hesitation. You just have to, as soon as that ball is snapped, you've got to ride the center, and you have got to pick a spot and go. And I just find that what ends up happening is some guys, they hesitate. And when you hesitate down in that situation, you're going to kill yourself. Because the other thing you could do that would really screw teams up, but it's almost teams don't want to take that chance, is go on a second count. Because everybody's guessing that you're going to go on one. Because the reason you do that is you do not want to cause your own team to go offside in that situation. Then you're going to be third and six. So a lot of teams don't take that chance. So defensively, you know, if you know what the cadence is, you know what the guy's been normally doing, you know it's going to be on one. So all the linebackers, everybody, are just jamming up and jumping over the pile. And that kills a quarterback who stands up and tries to reach over the pile. You're not going to get it. You're just not going to get it.
Because Doug Flutie was the king at the third one.
You know what he was the king at, though? He understood that when, because I remember my first year with him, you're right, he used to run quarterback sneaks for like 40 or 50 yards.
Yeah.
And what he would do, Daryl, is that he would go outside because everybody pinches in. Because everyone thinks you're going over the center guard tackle or the center guard gap. And if you have the guts and understand the way that teams are trying to block that and trying to attack it, then that's where that outside edge is. It's open. And if you get past those guys, there's no one there. There's no one in the middle. And that's why you see teams in short yardage. If you break the initial line of scrimmage, usually the guy's gone because there's no one in the middle of the field. And Doug was unbelievable at reading that particular blocking scheme.
Because Jarius Jackson did get stopped by doing that move in Saskatchewan, I believe it was, earlier this year.
Yeah, he tried to pinch and go outside. But you have to realize that if there's a guy standing up over your edge, then you can't do that. And the other thing is that a lot of guys got to realize that if you have a guy shooting a gap, and what I mean by that is they're just going to throw themselves inside the gap. Well, if your guy can't get in front of him, he's going to be in your running lane. And that's why, I mean, you've got to tell your offensive lineman when you get out there, this is where I'm going. You know, Angus Reid and Kelly Bates, I'm coming right behind you. Fire up. All we need is 1 yard, and that's where I'm going. And that's where you've got to attack it. And it's just who wants it more.
Julio, getting into the Calgary-Saskatchewan game, Saskatchewan won it 26-24. And you watched that game live, I take it, hey?
Yes.
Okay, I was watching it live at that time, and I have to say it was a low point for me, the CFL this season, and it made them look real bad to me, was CBC's coverage of the onside kick where Ryan Thelwell knocked it out of bounds and an offside was called on Calgary, and the whole game went on, and the game had ended, and I still didn't even know if they had made the right call, because CBC never showed a replay. What happened? Have you heard about that? What happened there?
I have no idea.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
As far as them showing the replay and why they didn't show it,
yeah.
I have no idea.
Do you know what I'm talking about, though?
Yeah, but don't get me started on the whole coverage, because I thought that a lot of it was real terrible. But anyways, that's a, you know, you're right. You know what I mean? A big play like that, and the thing about the CFL on CBC, usually what they do is they do a good job during the playoffs of having a lot more cameras there. And you're right, a big play like that, I mean, you've got to show that play over and over and over again to give everyone an understanding of what happened.
Well, at least once, Julio.
I know. Well, that's a given, you know, and you're right. It drives you nuts watching it sometimes because you don't even get that replay, right?
No, so, the game ended and I didn't even know, and the announcers never told me. They didn't show me. I mean, take 2 seconds and show the replay. Just show when they kicked it, where the guy was. They never showed that replay.
And the travesty is that Williams, the guy who got called for the offside, was on the far sideline. He was away from the onside kick.
Wow.
So that should be something that people should understand too, that, you know, going offside is one thing on the front side of the fake. But when you are the backside away from the fake, why in God's green earth would you even be remotely close to the line of scrimmage? Do you think you're going to make a play 65 yards away? I don't understand, but I agree with you that with the whole replay thing. I don't understand it, and you know, but that's their issue, and who knows why they didn't do it.
Yeah, and it did make the whole league. I mean, I just, you know, you're watching it and you're watching NFL football all day too, and just to see that happen, and then not the announcers weren't talking about it. There was no replay. I was a little dumbfounded. Julio, I want to get into the crowds though. Winnipeg and Saskatchewan, both home games, both teams got wins there. The crowds were awesome in both games.
Yes. Yeah, and you knew that was going to happen in Saskatchewan, the first time since 1988 they've hosted a home playoff game. And, and at that time, too, they got throttled by the BC Lions. Matt Dunnigan and Tony Cherry just ran roughshod over the whole Saskatchewan team. But for them to go home after all the changes this year with Eric Tillman and Ken Austin, a tremendous job they've done, and to be able to not only to host a playoff game but win it for their fans, it must be a huge thrill for them. And it really just, I think, like you said earlier, for me, this is where I wanted to see this game. I wanted to see BC and Saskatchewan. And, you know, I think earlier on in the year, I think with the whole Eric Tillman and Wally Buono thing happening, and I felt like this was where it was headed, and the direction it was going to go was these were the two teams that were going to meet in the play in the Western Final. And luckily for us as fans, this is the game that we're going to see, because I think it's going to be a hell of a game. I think that both teams match up very, very well with one another. I think as you've seen in pretty much most of the matchups, they go down to the wire. They play good, tough football against one another, and the fans are going to be in for another treat, because it doesn't really matter, Darrell, who plays in the Canadian Football League playoffs. They always are pretty much exciting. You very, very rarely do you ever see a blowout of any team, and that's what makes it so exciting. It seems like everything goes down to the wire.
Yeah, Julio, third time in 4 years, Saskatchewan will be BC will be hosting Saskatchewan in the conference final. But tell us about the Saskatchewan football team, because this was a team at the beginning of the year. Everything I read and everything I heard, this team was supposed to be terrible. They had to cut a ton of payroll.
$700,000.
To even have a team this year. I mean, I don't think people are giving Saskatchewan enough credit for what they accomplished this year.
Yeah, you're right. And I think, Darrell, that what ends up happening, too, is that the best thing that happened to Saskatchewan was the fact that they brought in two guys that are familiar with this league. And he's a guy... He's a guy who was able to, he cut the salary he needed. But again, you know, Eric's been in this league long enough. He understands the kind of player you need to have in order to be successful. So that's the kind of guy that he's going out and recruiting. And Ken Austin understands the mentality that's in Saskatchewan because he played there for all those years. And he's a good coach. And they have had to overcome a lot. They've had to overcome injuries. They've had to do a lot of different things. And it's a real credit to them. They have done a tremendous job in Saskatchewan, not only on the field but off the field. And they should be given a lot of credit. And to get to this point, really, at the beginning of the year when most teams thought, you know what, they're going to be good, they're going to be competitive, but they're probably a year or two away from being really good. That's obviously moved way ahead of schedule, and it's the kind of thing where I'm sure Eric and Kent Austin and the rest of the Saskatchewan management are thrilled, as are their fans, that things have gone a lot quicker than they expected.
Should the Lions be appealing Jimenez's suspension, Julio?
I don't know. Yeah,
Julio, I honestly think I might have seen that play. I'm still not sure because it was away from the play. And it was there, and if I saw what I think I saw, this guy's lucky he's going to be playing in It's only a one-game suspension, is all I have to say.
Well, here's the, you know, and here's the thing. I'm in my mind, I know, because I never saw the play. And all I know is that if you're getting kicked out for a play like that, something bad had to happen. And then to hear that Gargiulo really is probably not going to, you know, not going to walk the same, and be lucky that his career's not over. And you're right. He is lucky that there was even a game suspension. And this would all be a moot point. If they would have been able to capture this thing on video, it would have been done. Like, and it would have been a no-brainer. But they haven't. And the thing is that with no proof, they're going based on the written report by the referee. And, you know, Jimenez is going to appeal it. And it's going to go to arbitration, and if it goes to arbitration, you know he at least is going to play in this game. And if he plays in this game, it'll be interesting to see like what the league does, because if this arbitration hearing goes, you know, beyond, and say hypothetically the Lions win this game and they get to the Grey Cup, and the arbitration hearing isn't till after the Grey Cup, well then that makes the league look bad, doesn't it? You mean that this whole process? It makes the league, I think, you know, I know what the league is trying to do. They're trying to clean this kind of stuff up. But at the same time, they have to be way more decisive. It has to happen way quicker after a game. I can't understand why 9 days later they came down with this decision. It just doesn't make any sense to me.
And, Julio, you know, I'm standing there just with my ears open during the half times, and I heard some, you know, the Calgary radio color commentator, I don't know his name.
Greg Peterson.
He said it was one of the dirtiest plays he's seen in that league in a long time. And I heard even some guys who cover the Lions and some supporters of the Lions say, quite frankly, Julio, I got to say, they say Jimenez. Rob Murphy, just a tough player, but they say Jimenez is quite frank. I heard it. They say he's a dirty player. I mean, what do you have to say?
You know, here's the thing, though, and I think that Wally made a point today was that, you know, in the 1,200 plays that this team has run all year, Jimenez has gotten 3 roughing calls, and that one was the one that he got on Gargiulo. Now, a dirty player to me is a guy that is going to get, you know, he's going to draw a certain amount of penalties his way. And, you know, Jimenez hasn't. Do I think that Jimenez plays, you know, right on that edge? Yeah, I really think so. But he plays to the whistle, and the thing that's in question here is the cut blocking downfield. He's allowed to do that. That is within the rules of the game. And if you're playing within the rules of the game, then I have no problems with that. But if he, you know, cut him or caught him from behind, then there's no excuse for that.
And that, Julio, is what I think I saw.
Yeah, well, that's what everyone is. Everybody is thinking, have they seen the play that they haven't seen it? So unless we see it,
yeah. It's
all speculation, right? You can't make a decision on a play that you think you saw.
And it was, sorry, Julio, it was completely away from where the ball was, too.
Exactly. But you know what? That's allowed. That play is allowed. If he cut him from the front.
No, I don't think I saw that, Julio.
Well, that's the thing, though.
Am I right? Am I hearing what people are saying? Because I'm not exactly sure if I saw it. Is that what people are saying, though? He cut him from behind?
Well, that's what they are saying. And Wally is saying that the play was a legal play if it was done within the whistle. And that's where nobody knows. Like, no one, everyone thinks, oh, yeah, well, it was from behind. I don't know if it was from behind. I didn't see it. And people, you know, I mean, if you saw it and you happen to be looking right at that play, then that's, you know, then those people can make a better judgment. For me, I haven't seen it. And all I can go on is what Wally tells me from what he watches the film, that, hey, the play was not over. He was allowed to be downfield. Is it ethically, do you see a lot of linemen do it? No, because they know the danger that lies there. But certain guys, they play to the whistle, and that's part of the rule. If you want to change that rule, Daryl, then that's what they need to do. They need to say, you know what, within the tackle box, those linemen can cut block. But if you're not within the tackle box, then you can't be going downfield trying to cut guys. Because we're not talking about, you know, guys that can't run and get... You mean Jimenez is 6'6", he's 320 pounds, and he can run. I mean, that's a scary projectile. if you know what I mean. Like, I mean, he becomes a weapon running downfield. And if he is playing within the rule that he can cut block a guy downfield, then how can you deny him that?
Because it's a cut block from behind.
No, if it's a cut block from behind, I agree with you.
Yeah.
But if he's cutting from the front, if he's cutting you with his head and shoulders in front of you, then that's legal.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, I don't think I don't know. I don't think I saw it, actually, but I just I don't know.
Hey, Daryl, I'm right behind you, buddy. You know what I mean? I totally agree that, you know what? What if he went from behind, that is a dirty, dirty play. And
yeah.
One game is not enough.
Yeah.
But until someone shows me what he did, then I can't say.
I wish I had my camcorder and I could YouTube it.
You know what?
Julio,
I wish that TSN would have been able to get it.
Yeah.
Because if they would have got it, then we, like you say, I think that the right justice would have been handed down. But with no evidence, how do you do it?
Yeah. No. Exactly. Julio, a couple more minutes here. What kind of game are we looking at this weekend, though? Saskatchewan and BC. How fun is this one going to be?
Well, it's going to be great. It really is. I think, as we talked about earlier, both these teams match up so well against one another, and really. When Kerry Joseph can account for 500 yards of offense with his arm and his leg, that you know where the key to winning this football game is. You need to stop Kerry Joseph. You need to limit his ability to get outside the tackle box and make plays with his feet. Because if you allow him the opportunity to get in the open field, he's just too good an athlete. He's either going to run for a first down, or he is going to throw for a first down. So you can't leave him out in open space by himself. You have to have someone in his face. You have to have someone who is going to go after him and force him into making a decision. And that's where the Lions have been very successful. They confuse him. They force him to throw the ball downfield. And in all due respect to Kerry Joseph, if you're going to beat him, you got to beat him with allowing him to throw with his arm in the pocket. Because if you allow him out on the edge, he's going to kill you. And the Lions know that. We talked to Javi Glatt today on Rick Ball's show, and Javi said the same thing. You can't allow a guy like that in the open field. You got to have something in his face. You got to try to confuse him with coverage, and that's what they're going to try to do. If they can't do it, it's going to be a long, long afternoon for the BC Lions. If they can do it, then they're going to earn themselves a trip to Toronto, because offensively, I think they do enough that they can score some points. And if they can do that early on and get that crowd of the game, it's going to be very, very difficult for them to do their jobs offensively with all that noise, because they could wreak. You saw what the Saskatchewan crowd did to Calgary. They caused, what, 5 procedure calls? And if the Lions fans can do that, it can get awfully loud in that BC, in that dome, when those fans are going crazy. And they can play a big, big factor in this football game.
So Cam Wake, Brent Johnson, and the boys, it's going to come down to the D-line, you think?
Yeah, I think so. I really think that Javi Glatt's going to play a big role. Jamal Johnson, you got to spy. You got to have someone spy Kerry Joseph so that when he goes and fakes like he's going to hand off, and then he keeps the ball and gets outside, and there's nobody to contain him, you're asking for trouble. And Cam Wake and Brent Johnson, and I think that might be even, I think that with those guys, because they're so athletic, you don't want to take away from their ability to get upfield, but I think you're going to see a lot of controlled rush, where they're going to go upfield trying to get them, but they're not going to play out of control by trying to get out of their lane. It's all going to be about discipline, staying in your lane, getting upfield, and allowing him the chance to throw the ball, but throw the ball from in the pocket, because I think they believe that may be his weakness. Now, you look at statistically, you know, he threw for, what, 399 yards, and he can throw the ball downfield, but what I'm saying is a lot of those plays come when he's running around in that pocket, and he gets outside. Now he can create a big play. But I think if you force him into the pocket and keep him there and force him to throw, you can wreak a lot of havoc with him.
Hypothetically speaking, BC's down 14-3 or 14-6 at the half. Double D, does he come into the game?
Yes. Yes.
How big of a...
Well, you know what, Darrell? When healthy, he's one of the best quarterbacks in the league. And I think at halftime, if you're down and you're struggling, that he might be the spark that you need. And really, there is no tomorrow. If you've got a guy with his asset, that he is, you know, he's that good, then you play him. And with all due respect to Jarius Jackson, because I think Jarius Jackson is going to get the opportunity to run with this team as far as he can take it. But if he struggles and if they get behind and he's not moving the team, I don't think that there's any hesitation in putting Dave Dickinson in because, you know, he's one of the best quarterbacks when healthy. He is healthy. He's played. And, you know, I don't think you leave any bullets in the gun. You take every one of them out. And if Dave doesn't do it, then you put Buck Pearson. I mean, because there is no tomorrow. You're playing to win the game, and you use everything you possibly can to do that.
So you're saying if they're down 14-0 after the first quarter, we might even see a change.
Well, you know what? I think it all depends on how it all transpires. If you throw two interceptions for touchdowns, and you're down 14-0, then you might think, hey, maybe this is a little too much for Jarius Jackson. Maybe it might be too much pressure. It's overwhelming him. Then let's make a change. It all depends on how it all transpires. If he's not playing well, then I think you have to do it. But if it's not his fault, then you don't make that change, right? You don't do it just for the sake of doing it. You do it because you think that it's necessary because he's not playing up to what you think he's capable of playing.
How excited is Jarius Jackson that he's playing in Canada and not everybody's asking him Notre Dame questions right now?
He's probably happy about that. But, you know, you can't help but be thrilled for Jarius Jackson and what he's been able to do. It's a huge thrill for him, I'm sure. And I'm glad that Wally's giving him the opportunity because everyone says, well, if you got a guy like Dave Dickinson, the experience, how do you expect to gain experience unless you're put in that situation? You mean you don't know how this guy's going to respond in a playoff in a pressure situation unless you put him in. And so by putting him in and allowing him a chance to play, hey, look, he has responded to every pressure situation that he's been in this season. And I have no hesitation in saying that he is going to respond well. But you never know, and if it does start to go south on him, you know you got some pretty good insurance policies.
Yeah, awesome. Because Notre Dame did just lose to Air Force on the weekend.
Well, they're now. Yeah. I don't think you almost don't even want to talk about that anymore because it has been such a train wreck over
there. I love it. You know they've got Charlie Weiss. He's got 8 years left on his contract after this year.
Well, I'm sure he's going to turn it around.
But, oh yeah, he'll bring him to 4-6 before
hey,
you know
what,
it.
Are you happy about Joe Torre becoming a Los Angeles Dodgers?
Love it.
You love it, don't you?
Yeah, love it. You know, the Dodgers have been a team. I've been their fan since I was 7 years old, and they've won one playoff game since 1988. Jose Lima pitched a complete game victory versus the St. Louis Cardinals like 2 or 3 years ago, and they were, I think, 82-80 this year, and they're just so okay. And you get a guy like
all the talk about them getting A-Rod.
You know what? I talked to my dad about it because he's you know he's my Dodger.
You share a passion.
We're Dodger fans, and we agreed if A-Rod comes, you know, I initially may be like, you know, people are going to be dissing him, but to be honest, the one position they need offensively is a third baseman. The one thing they need in their lineup, because they got a real good young team also, and they got some good veterans.
Hey, Darryl, is he going to play third base?
Well, apparently he's not a shortstop anymore is what I'm reading, as he's been subpar defensively at third, and just the way he's been going at third, it's going to be tough for a team to justify putting him at short. And if he goes to the Dodgers, plays third base, and if they're able to bring Jeff Kent back because he might retire, I mean, quite frankly, that's all. And if they can bring one starting pitcher in and be healthy this year, Jason Schmidt and the like, Julio, this team could be as good as any in baseball before you blink.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
And they've got the right manager. He's a great manager.
Yeah, no, I like it. And, you know, you're going to have all the Yankee fans dissing him, and maybe that's what he needs.
Yeah.
Is a little bit of, you know, let's go stick it to the New York Yankee fans.
Yeah,
cause,
exactly.
I don't know. I'm with it, though. I'm with
right
it,
right on.
Your pick, Julio, this weekend. What's the score going to be?
Well, it's going to be close. And I think that you're going to see probably, you know, in like a 28-25 or a 31-25 kind of game. That's what I believe. But it's going to be something that's going to be down to the wire, and it's going to be classic CFL. And that's what I'm looking forward to because I think it's going to be just a hell of a game and a hell of an atmosphere. And anybody who loves this league, like I love it, is looking forward to it because this is why you play the game. This is why we're fans, is because of these situations. So I'm looking forward to it.
And fourth conference final hosted in 4 years. What's up with that, eh?
Ride the good times, my friend. Ride the good times.
You know what, Julio? Back to A-Rod, though. I just gotta say, because I gotta get it off my chest. If he signs elsewhere, I won't be disappointed. I'll put it to you that way.
Okay.
I'll put it that way. Julio Caravata from the BC Lions Radio Network. Julio, I'm a little tired today, and sorry you, but we'll trudge on, and we'll have a great day on Sunday, hey?
Thanks, buddy. I appreciate it.
Awesome. See you Sunday, Julio.
Try showing up early, eh?
No, that's my new thing with you guys.
Come on, try showing up early. Let's get involved in the atmosphere.
You're right. It's a special day. It's a special day. Thanks, Julio.
See you later, Dale.
All right, everybody. That was Julio Caravato. Always love to have him on from the BC Lions Radio Network. All right, everybody. We're going to take one last break here. You're listening to Weir's Barbecue on 101.9 FM CITR Radio, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. We're just going to take a little break. We're going to come back, close off the show. And then Mike with Fletcher Head will be coming on. We'll be right back in a jimmy.
In the timbers of Venario, the wolves are running round. The wind up was so hard and cold, froze 10 feet beneath the ground. John, murder me. I beg of you, John, murder me. They saw me, don't murder me. I beg of you, don't murder me. Please don't murder me. When I awoke the dial, 600 pounds of steel was grinning at my window. All I said was, come on.
Everybody, welcome back to the show. Oh, I tell you, okay, here's my day, Mike, is I'm going to be going from here to the gallery downstairs. You know the little bar downstairs, right?
The old pit pub?
Not pit pub. The gallery. It's on the main floor of the sub.
Okay.
Pit pub's downstairs.
Yeah.
It's right by, like, the little snack shop thing and the cookie cutter place and the... Yeah, it's $2 beers on Tuesday.
Uh-oh.
No, I'm not doing that. That was last week.
Okay.
I actually walked home with my buddy Derek. He ditched me somewhere around 4th and Alma. We went there, then we went to Japanese food on campus somewhere. I walked home downtown from here last Tuesday.
Jeez.
I'm still feeling it.
Lucky you weren't here after.
Yeah, you saw me here. You saw me. Remember, I left my record up here. Yeah, you know, I did that. Pitch black here. We had a little blackout on campus.
Everything went black after you left, even that little emergency light.
You know you're in trouble when the emergency light is still dark. Anyway, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to go to the thing, get some nachos. And then I'm going to probably go to my folks, say hello, say because they live right by, and say hello to my dog, Cassidy. And then I'm going to go home, and I got to do some cleanup. Okay? But as soon as I'm done that cleanup, thump, bed. Yeah. Yeah. I'm feeling a little tired all week.
Lasting 5 days.
Last 5 days?
We're up in the Soyuz.
You're up in a Soyuz.
Came back today.
You leave for New York City tomorrow. Good for you. How long are you going to New York for?
Till Sunday.
Till Sunday. So you won't miss a show.
Nope.
You won't miss a show. Nope. All right. Well, that was some good banter to take me to the 6 o'clock. Yeah. What? That was some good fill to take me to 6 o'clock. Anyways, I would like to talk National Football League for a moment here. Do you know what a suicide pool is, Mike, at all? Do you know what a suicide pool is at all or no?
No, I don't.
Okay, a suicide pool is each week you got to take a team, and you can only take the same team once, and you take them straight up to win,
yeah.
And if you win, you can go on to the next week. If you lose one game, you're eliminated. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So you pick one team once, and you know you go into a pool, you can have 200 people, 500 people, or 20 people, whatever, and who's ever the last man standing wins. This week was the week that just knocked the hell out of people. Because what happened this week was St. Louis, with a record of no wins and 8 losses, went into New Orleans, who had won. They were 4-4, but they'd won either 4 in a row or 4 of their last 5. They were hot, and they were supposed to be a great team coming into the year. Bad start, but now they got it together. Well, St. Louis went into New Orleans and won that game by a score of 37-29. Mark Bulger threw for 302 yards, and that was the game that just knocked the crap out of people.
Is there anyone, there's still people left, though?
Well, I'm sure. You know, obviously, I mean, my pool, everybody got eliminated this week. There was like 30 of us went into the beginning. Everybody got eliminated. There was like 8 teams left coming into this week. The one guy picked Seattle to win. He was the only guy standing.
Ah, so even you're out.
I was out week four.
Okay.
I was out week four. All right, everybody, that's it. That was the filler to end the show. All right, everybody, Mike with Flexure Head coming up right now. CD1, Mike?
Yes, please.
I'm going to go have some nachos. Thanks for listening. Have a great day, everybody.
Fight since butter that had before the birth.